Nothing touched us. Hanzo grabbed my arm. Is this real? It's real. Then I saw her. Muan, in owl form, flying straight toward us. Her legs were stretched in front of her, talons open wide. The twins stared up at the shattering sky in shock. I kept my eyes on Muan. She was fearsome, but not as fearsome as who I knew had to be right behind her. The air vibrated. The arena shook with so much force, my teeth rattled in my head. Jordan watched in horror as the panicked crowd emptied the stadium. It can't be! Hanzo crumpled to the ground, and I lunged in time to break his fall. Brooks knelt next to us and whispered, He's asleep now. You mean he's in hell, I said through gritted teeth. A cold shiver ran through me. This wasn't how things were supposed to be happening. Something, everything, was wrong. A swirl of black smoke rose from the pieces of sky at our feet, solidifying into a dark column. It formed shoulders, a head, arms, and legs. The eyes came last, filled with shadows coiled like snakes. Finally, Apuch looked exactly like he had at the volcano, with his elegant dark suit and his sinister gaze. Except he seemed even stronger now. Muan landed on his shoulder. She smiled at the twins. It's been too long, boys. They didn't say anything, just stood there, frozen. Brooks whispered, We need to get out of here. I looked back at Hondo, his pale skin, his barely rising chest. Where was he now? And how was I supposed to move him? He weighed like 180. Bird lifted a hand, and the world stopped shaking. The sky stopped falling. You think you can destroy our magic? He said to Apuch. But Apuch wasn't paying attention to Bird. He kept his dark eyes on me. With a grin, he said, Thank you, Zane. The tattoo on my wrist burned, as if a flame were searing it into my skin. I grabbed it and grimaced. Bird's gaze fell on the mark. His whole face went pale, and that's when I understood. This wasn't just a mark. It was a tracking device. Chapter 27 You did this. Jordan's granite face looked like it might crumble. The mark continued to burn, the skull's sleeping eyes fluttering as if they might open any second. My heart thrashed against my ribs. I jerked my sleeve over the tattoo and stood. You were stupid enough to make a deal with the god of death? Bird said with a smirk I wished I could wipe off his face. Apuch laughed. Come now. Unapu, let's be gentlemen about this. Jordan's eyes raked over Apuch with so much hatred, I thought old Puke might melt and we could all go home. Did you really think your pathetic magic could keep me out? Apuch said to the twins. Your little sandcastle isn't as strong as you imagined. Jordan's jaw tightened as he looked around at the broken pieces of their illusory world. The shattered walls, the splintered sky, the distant skyscrapers began to sway again. Such a poor imitation, Apuch said, following his gaze. Did you come here for a fight, Apuch? Bird's tone told me he wanted Apuch to say yes. Boys, please, Apuch said. I didn't come here to fight, simply to destroy your little... What shall we call it? He took in the halfway-finished demolition. Bubble? And to set the record straight. His voice rose a few godly notches for the next part. You never defeated me. Only a couple of my weak underlords. The world tilted. Surely that was wrong. Surely I hadn't relied on a plan that was built on empty boasts. We beat you. Bird said, through gritted teeth. Apuch stroked Muan's head. Your lies are such bitter little things. And to think I was locked away, unable to refute them. Hardly justice. Wouldn't you agree, Zane? I gave a short nod. I mean, it really was a raw deal. Why would Jordan and Bird lie? To establish their fame, their notoriety, Puke said in a commanding tone. To ensure that no other Godborns would ever challenge them. He turned his hardened gaze on the twins. I do admire your sinister plan, he said to them. Lie about defeating me, inspire humans to ignore the gods, instill enough fear in the gods to make them create the sacred oath. That way, you never have any competition. I processed each bit of information, and it all made sense. Jordan and Bird had manipulated the gods into taking the sacred oath. I remembered what Pacific had said about the twins inspiring jealousy in the gods. But if the gods were so worried about Godborns, why didn't they kill the twins? I asked.
Very on point. Bravo,
Apuch said, smiling.
The twins used their popularity among humans as leverage in a deal with the gods. Jordan and Bird promised to go on a PR tour, encouraging humans to revere the gods again, to restore balance.
Man, that was messed up, I thought, but it didn't surprise me now that I'd seen their ugliness up close. Jordan and Bird shared a glance. Beads of sweat formed on Jordan's forehead. Was fear getting the best of him? No. This was something more serious. He clawed at his throat. His eyes bugged out, and he collapsed. Bird squatted next to his brother, pressing on his chest, calling his name over and over. He glared up at Apuch.
I don't know how you did this, but I will make you pay.
For an instant, surprise registered on Apuch's face. That told me all I needed to know. It wasn't him. It was La Muerte. The chili pepper really had worked. A little late, but she'd worked. I wanted to slip away before the truth was discovered, but how could I, with Hondo passed out cold? Brooks gripped my wrist so hard, her nails dug into my skin.
This is going to be really, really bad.
You think? Then I said,
if I don't make it, I'm not listening.
Make sure Hondo gets out, please. Muwan lifted off Apuch's shoulder, flew across the stadium, and in one swoop snatched up a snake with her talons and flipped it into her mouth. My stomach turned. Bird looked wounded, like he and the snakes were BFFs, and a second later, the rest of the red reptiles evaporated with the snap of his finger.
We're going to destroy you, Bird said to Apuch.
We? Apparently not,
Apuch said coolly, looking at the comatose Jordan.
But I'll let you try your best. In the meantime, I have some plans of my own.
Why did I have a feeling my name was written on those plans? Muwan shifted into her human form. Same dress, same bronze skin, same dangerous smile.
You're too afraid to fight, old man, Bird provoked. I'm not the one trembling, Apuch said, with a calm but deadly glare.
Then his gaze turned to me, and I didn't like what I saw. Someone ready to collect what he was owed. I inched back. It wasn't time yet. I still had a whole day to figure out how to stop him. But how? I gripped the jade in my pocket for security, careful not to will myself to the empty and leave my body with monsters that wanted to see me dead. Suddenly, three huge black-winged creatures swooped down. They had human heads that were too small for their massive bodies. Like Muwan, they sported slick black feathers, razor-sharp talons, and wings with a 15-foot span. The creatures were identical to one another, bald pates, sharp chins, bulging veins in their necks, and foreheads like their blood was too thick.
The only difference was that each had eyes that glowed a different color. Yellow, orange, and purple. Bird tried to make a run for it, but the yellow and purple-eyed monsters moved like lightning, snatching him, then Jordan, in their huge wings, and cocooning them tightly so only their heads poked out.
"You remember the Yanto Triad, surely?"
A pooch addressed Bird in a self-satisfied tone.
"Allow me to reintroduce you to Yanto, Usukun, and Uyutsin, otherwise known as good, bad, and indifferent. Except we all know there isn't any good, but it sure rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?"
Bird thrashed, trying to break free, but the only things that got loose were the curses he spat at Apuch. As the words flew from his mouth, they turned into silver daggers aimed at his nemesis. Muwan batted them away easily. Jordan was a lifeless doll in the wings of his monster. I thought about Hurakan. I mean, if Puke hated the twins for lying about beating him, imagine how much he hated my dad for sticking him in his prison for hundreds of years. Yeah, this was going to get ugly. What had Hurakan said? Inconceivable? Skinny kid versus God of Death. Some match.
"The gods will unite against you," Bird said with a grunt.
"Yes, the gods,"
Apuch said casually.
"Last I checked, they were already at war within their ranks, trying to figure out who could have set me free."
"Tisk, tisk, tisk. You really can't trust anyone these days now, can you?"
Apuch turned to me.
"As for you, Zane."
Bird narrowed his eyes at me, like he was just remembering I was there.
"This is your fault, human!"
Apuch hesitated, as if deciding how much he wanted to say.
"He's no human,"
he said slowly, like he wanted to savor the shock that registered on Bird's face.
"But we can talk about that later, can't we, Zane?"
I didn't think I could get any words past the lump in my throat, but somehow I managed. I'm human. I mean, sure, yeah, later. But I was so hoping there wouldn't be a later. I'd rather disappear, hole up in the Caribbean somewhere. Except that wasn't me. Not anymore. I'd holed up at home for a whole year because I was too afraid to face the kids at school. Too afraid to see the way they looked at my leg. Too afraid to try and be someone more than the names they threw at me. Well, those days were over. I'd told Pacific I'd never hide, and I meant it. Even if it meant going down, at least I'd do so fighting.
"So the Gimp's not human,"
Bird finally muttered. I could see his mental gears clicking into place, but not before Apuch started to laugh. I mean, a giant, uproarious laugh that shook the stone walls and could have registered a 10 on the Richter scale. The creatures gripping the twins smiled. Their teeth were black, like they'd been stained with ink, and their breath smelled worse than rotting meat in July. The ground trembled. The stone walls began to crumble. The skyscrapers in the distance fell in giant columns of smoke and dust. In only a few more minutes, this place would be completely destroyed. The creatures holding Bird and Jordan folded their wings tighter and tighter. Each of the twins' faces puckered like their heads were being sucked dry. Their skin turned gray and purplish veins spread beneath. Their eyeballs bugged out and turned dark red.
"Don't kill them!"
I shouted.
"This is going to be good."
That was Brooks still gripping my hand.
"You can't be serious. You're no fun."
Apuch turned to me.
"Trust me. I'm not generous enough to kill them quickly."
Then to good, bad, and indifferent, he said,
"Take them away. Their magic will make a lovely feast for us."
The triad took flight, carrying the twins into the falling sky. Apuch started to fade.
"Wait!"
I called to him.
"You tricked me. This mark!"
He stopped, looked at me.
Clever, yes? You can't run, and you can't hide.
Unless I burn off this tattoo.
The magic runs deep, and you aren't brave enough to withstand that kind of pain.
A pooch sighed.
I'll see you soon, Zane Obispo.
He gazed around the collapsing world and said,
Very soon, judging from this house of cards.
Chapter 28. Brooks shook my arm. We have to get out of here. Help me with Hondo, I shouted over the falling debris. But even with both of our efforts, he was dead weight. No way were we going to get him out before the place crashed all around us. This was not how it was going to end. Not in a dollhouse of Jordan's making. Brooks's eyes shifted, the gold and amber flecks glowing like they might ignite any second. And for an instant, she looked like her hawk self, mythical and even dangerous. Go, I told her. Save yourself. Not without you. Why was she so stubborn? At the same moment, a very large figure emerged through a cloud of black and gray dust. Jazz.
I guessed you all might have some problems, he yelled. I put some minicams in your clothes, and what a show it's been.
Jazz scooped Hondo up like a sack of chile pods and hoisted him over his shoulder.
We've got a boat to catch.
I'd never been so happy to see anyone in my whole life. Brooks and I hurried behind him, but he didn't head for the exit. I figured it was already demolished. Instead, he went to the roof's edge. And let me tell you, it was hard to keep up with a giant whose stride was like 10 yards, especially since my stupid limp was back. The time limit on our enchantment had run out. Gusts of cold wind raged across the broken world. Umbrellas tumbled, trees split in two, glasses shattered. I looked over the edge, wondering where the safety net was, or maybe we were waiting for a helicopter. My answer came within seconds. An enormous flying machine with a giant red sail rose from the darkness, and you wouldn't believe who was driving. The skeleton, Flacco. Really? This was our ride out of here?
Tickets, please,
he said, circling in what looked like a 4-seater go-kart with a small engine near the back. Jazz grunted,
Get closer!
The roof quaked, splitting the cement.
Next time he circles, jump and hold on tight, Jazz boomed.
Was he kidding? Jump? Couldn't Flacco land? Then I realized the roof was going to give way any second. Brooks grabbed my hand.
Don't fall! I'll do my best.
On the count of three,
Jazz said, gripping Hondo with one arm.
Forget the count, I hollered. Let's get out of here.
The wind groaned angrily. Trees bent and writhed. Then a massive black hole opened in the sky, sucking everything into it, even the oxygen. Flacco circled back, closer and closer to the edge. He was only 3 feet away.
Let's fly, Brooks shouted.
Easy for her to say. She was part hawk.
Two,
Jazz shouted. Wait, what happened to one? I imagined myself as the jaguar with the power of those muscular back legs. Flacco was close enough that it wouldn't take much of a leap. I could do this.
Three!
We launched ourselves into the air. I used my one good leg, thrusting myself with all I had. At the last second, a gust of wind jerked the glider to the right. I came up short, barely latching onto the side rail. Everyone was tucked safely in the flying go-kart slash whatever. And me? I was dangling off the side. Brooks leaned over the edge.
Zane, what are you doing?
Oh, you know, just enjoying the view.
Don't let go, I told myself. Don't let go.
Take my hand. I was scared to, I admitted, but I couldn't hang on to the side of this thing for long. With a deep breath, I reached up and grabbed hold of her hand. She hauled me into the glider, where I clung to the seat for dear life. No time to be a thrill-seeker, she said, shaking her head.
Yeah, I groaned. Thrill.
You okay?
Jazz called from the front seat. Hondo was still sagging over his shoulder. I nodded, trying to get control of my breathing.
Good driving, eh?
Flacco said. Who knew skeletons could beam with pride? The engine whirred as we burst through a sheet of cold silver light, leaving the broken imitation world behind. It was like passing through a waterfall without the water. We sailed high above Santa Monica, over traffic-packed streets lit up with red taillights. A dark-haired woman was pushing a stroller below, and she walked with a small skip in her step, like my mom. I wondered if she was back home yet. What had she said to Huracan to get him to help me? Had she always known where to find him? I needed to sleep so I could talk to Ms. Cab and ask her to check on my mom. Then I realized the eyeball was in my backpack, which was still at Jazz's.
Where are we going? I shouted. To your place?
Not safe there, Jazz hollered back.
I need my eyeball,
I screamed, immediately realizing how stupid that sounded.
Woohoo!
Brooks leaned halfway out of the glider.
Faster!
Flacco obliged, and I felt sick as I gripped the edge of my seat. The salt air was my first clue we were headed back to the beach. When we got closer to the sand, I thought we'd land, but Flacco kept on going, right over the water, farther and farther toward the dark horizon. Brooks wasn't leaning out anymore. Brooks tapped Jazz on the shoulder.
What are we doing here?
Coming in for a landing, Jazz said. Might get a little wet. Jump when I say so, Flacco said.
I can't swim,
Brooks shouted. I could feel her panic as she tensed up for the first time since we'd taken flight. Below was a double-level boat too small for us to land on. So, dark sea it was.
I got you, I said,
thinking of the disaster the last time we'd plunged into unknown waters. Brooks paled and shook her head.
Don't let go, she said.
I promise. Flacco hovered about 5 feet over the water.
Jump!
He flew away as we dropped into the water's freezing currents. I kept hold of Brooks, which wasn't too hard, because she clawed her way onto my shoulders, pushing me down in her frenzy. Keeping my calm, I opened my mind and let her in. I need you to chill out or we're going to drown. She relaxed her death grip a little and clung to my back as I swam toward the boat. Jazz lifted us on board, where warm, dry towels were waiting, along with some snacks, a cooler filled with cherry cokes, and a sack containing gummy worms and pizza pockets. All of our belongings were already on the vinyl bench seat. I hurried over and was relieved to find Ms. Cab's eyeball still tucked safely in my backpack. But when I saw my boring old cane, my heart sank. I wished he'd left that behind. Jazz took Hondo below decks to the cabin, where he could sleep off the poison, while Brooks and I sat huddled under a blanket at the stern. The boat looked like a fixer-upper fishing vessel with a rusted railing, pitted deck, and a covered second deck with a steering wheel, seat, and some gears. I took a soda from the cooler but didn't drink any. My stomach was twisted in knots. I'd failed. Wasted way too much time on a stupid idea. And now I had nothing. No plan, no powers, no future. The gods were ready to start a war over something I'd done. And Hondo was suffering a pain worse than death while we sat around under the stars. Huracan had been right when he'd said what lies ahead is inconceivable. A cool breeze drifted over us as the boat rocked gently in the water. The night replayed in my mind so fast I wasn't sure any of it had really happened.
Why'd Jazz bring us here? I asked.
Must not be safe in Venice Beach, Brooks said, shivering as she sipped her Coke. I stared into the darkness. Where do you think Puke took Jordan and Bird?
Wherever it is, Brooks said, the jerks deserved it.
I knew they were rotten, but I can't believe they lied about defeating our pooch. I take it back. I can totally believe it. Man, they'd do anything for fame and power.
Okay, Bird and Jordan were jerks. But man, getting smothered by those oily, smelly black wings and carted off like a couple of corpses seemed tragic.
I really want to know, I said.
Brooks rolled her eyes.
I have no idea. Where would you take your sworn enemies if you were the god of death, darkness, and destruction, and someone had moved into your castle?
Probably a putrid pit filled with vicious rats and killer ants that would eat out your eyeballs.
Brooks let out a light laugh. That's sick, you know that?
You asked.
La Luna was a wedge clinging to the sky. I only had one moon left until La Pooch came to collect on our deal.
Brooks?
She turned away from me.
I twisted my hands together.
Something bad's coming, isn't it?
When I met Huracan, he saw the mark on my wrist.
Why was this so hard to talk about?
So?
So, he said I have to be the one to stop Puke. Because my life's now tied to his. Because I was the one to let him out. And if I don't...
Brooke swiveled to face me. Her eyes burned fiercely.
You'll end up a soldier of death, even if the gods kill him.
Heat prickled up my spine, and I wanted to crawl out of my own skin.
That about sums it up.
I stood and took a deep breath. I have to tell them.
Tell who what?
I can't let the gods go to war over something I did.
Brooks jumped up and grabbed my arm.
No, Zane. That would be like double suicide. Are you trying to die?
No, not exactly.
She paced with her usual look of determination. But that wasn't going to get me out of my dilemma.
The gods want this war, she said. They've been looking for a reason to start one. You telling them now? It wouldn't be worth it.
How do you know?
You heard, Jazz. We've had peace for too long,
Brooks huffed.
Nakone's been waiting for this.
I remembered the name. The god of war.
He's always hungry for blood, and he's been itching for a fight, but never had a good excuse until now. So with or without you, Zane, the gods are going to battle it out.
Don't you see? Telling them would be a huge mistake. It won't change anything.
I nodded, and we sat in silence after that, each of us mentally trying to unlock a door we didn't have the key for.
All those people, I finally said, from the party, are they dead?
Jazz appeared from the cabin below. From what I saw on the minicams, I think they got out. They won't even remember where they were. They'll think it was another earthquake or that they have a killer hangover.
Brooks froze. I can't believe you spied on us with those minicams.
And here I thought you'd be thanking me, Jazz said.
I caught on. Brooks was worried Jazz had heard something he shouldn't have. Like that I was a godborn.
I thought back. Had we ever mentioned it? Or anything else that might get him in trouble?
Thanks, Jazz, I said. You were right. Those guys are jerks.
Did you hear what they said to Hondo?
Jazz narrowed his eye.
Don't make me feel bad, kid. The cams don't have audio, okay? I'm still working on that technology.
My muscles relaxed, and Brooks let out a long breath.
How's my uncle? I asked Jazz, worried that Hondo would be in torment for hours.
He'll survive, the giant said, shaking his head. Won't be too happy when he wakes up, but it'll wear off, eventually.
After what the twins had done to Hondo, I couldn't even think about them without hate bubbling up inside me.
So...
I didn't know where to begin.
Where are we going?
The boat lurched and began moving through the waters. I looked up to the second level, but no one was piloting.
Jazz's face split into a broad smile.
Captain's herself, he said proudly.
Let me guess, I said.
Magic?
A deep frown formed.
No. Advanced Giant Engineering, AGE. It's the company I'm going to start once I have enough capital.
He pulled a bottle of what looked like chocolate milk out of the cooler.
Chocolate from Ish Cacao. Want some? It's a new recipe.
I took some and guzzled it, hoping it would make me feel as good as before. It was liquid velvet and even sweeter than the last batch, if that were possible. Jazz popped the lid off and swigged the whole bottle. After a loud burp, he said,
I've got some real bad news, little hawk.
What could be worse than... I stopped myself, not wanting to reveal too much to him.
Tell us, Brooks said to Jazz.
After you went to the fiesta, I got a letter, hand-delivered, but I don't know who it was from.
What did it say? I asked.
He pointed at me.
To take you to the old world.
My whole body tensed. The letter was probably from Huracan. He had said that I should look for the white spark striker there.
The gods are on the verge of declaring war, Jazz went on. No one's fessing up to breaking the sacred oath, and the pooch is running loose, creating all sorts of trouble. The gods can't even agree on how to deal with him.
He let out a frustrated breath.
Things are bad, little hawk, and they're about to get a whole lot worse.
Brooks balled her fists. My heart began to slam against my ribs. I couldn't let the gods get to Apooch first.
Do you know how to get to the old world?
I asked the giant.
The only way is through a gateway.
Brooks started searching frantically through her stuff.
Have you seen a rolled up piece of paper? She asked Jazz. Something with a lot of drawings and lines on it?
Jazz reached into a compartment and pulled out a scroll.
You mean this?
The gateway map.
With a shrug, Jazz said sheepishly,
I snooped. Sorry, but it was an emergency.
Brooks snatched the map from him and unfurled it. Her eyes scanned it wildly.
It's gone dark, she frowned. Did you break it?
The dark?
What do
you mean? I asked, now shivering. Jazz raised his eyebrows, looking insulted.
No, I didn't break it. All gateway maps are off the grid right now. Portals are closed, he said. The gods are limiting travel so they can try to find you-know-who.
Brooks continued to scan the map like it might come to life any second. Her dark hair swirled around her face as the wind whipped past.
How are we going to find the gateway, then?
My old friend holds up the sky, remember? Jazz said.
And?
Jazz rolled his eye like his point was obvious.
I know things, he said. Things like before there were maps, there were ancient gateways, secret and magical routes the gods used. Those portals aren't closed. I mean, they're a little rusty and not as pleasant as the modern ones, but they'll do the job.
That was right. Huracan had said the Bacabs used to work for him. It was all starting to come together.
Why aren't they closed? I asked.
Part of the original design, Jazz said. The creator gods made four, one in each hemisphere, and they're as permanent as the sun and the moon, or at least until Apooch burns it all up.
Creator gods. That would be Huracan and Kukumats.
Okay, I said. So is there one around here?
Not too far. According to my coordinates, we could be there by tomorrow night, Jazz said proudly. This boat is a high-powered devil. Might even get us there a couple hours sooner than that.
But we don't have that much time, I argued. The deadline is tomorrow when the moon rises.
I looked at Brooks and didn't have to read her mind to know she was thinking the same thing.
Apooch is going to destroy it all before then, Jazz.
Jazz rubbed his chin,
thinking. Then he stood and puffed up his chest so big a button popped off his purple vest.
Well, then it's a good thing you're in this dilemma with an engineering genius giant, isn't it? Let me get to work on the engine.
He turned to leave, then hesitated and said,
Cabin's all made up for you. Don't drool on the pillows. Got it?
Then he was gone. Chapter 29. I leaned over the railing, watching the dark waters whiz by below, wondering if Pacific was down there, if she could see me. Maybe she could slow time, or... Brooks stood next to me with her back to the ocean. She tilted her head and stared at the sky. I folded my shivering arms across my chest and let out a breath I felt like I'd been holding for hours. The enchantment had worn off, but she was still beautiful.
Your dad, Brooks said, kicking off her wet sandals. He was the one who sent the letter.
Huracan, I corrected her.
Whatever, she said. He's still your dad, even if you don't call him that.
It's not the same, I muttered as I loosened and took off my tie.
Same as what?
Family. Like my mom and Hondo and Rosie, I thought, my throat throbbing painfully. Being a member of my family wasn't automatic. It had to be earned. I remembered how, back on the twins' roof, Brooks's eyes had been on fire. They'd looked like they could burn up the whole world if she let them. You told my mom you were looking for your only family. Brooks dipped her head.
My sister.
What happened to her? I was prepared for Brooks to shut me down with a single glare, but she didn't.
She was promised to Bird by the matchmaker.
Matchmaker?
Arranged marriages are our family custom, Brooks said. Keeps bloodlines pure.
And Brooks wasn't a pureblood.
That sounds barbaric. Just let me get this out, Zane, please.
Okay, okay. She inhaled deeply.
But she didn't want to marry him. Quinn, that's her name.
Who could blame her for not wanting to marry the jerk? I was about to ask why she didn't tell the dirtbag to stuff it when Brooks filled in the gaps. She wrapped her arms around herself.
It's not something you can get out of. So Quinn went. She went to Ishtab and asked for her help.
What? Why would she think the new queen of hell could help her? Now I got the glare.
Are you going to let me finish or not?
I drew my finger across my lips in a promise to stay silent until she was done. With a slow shrug, Brooks whispered,
It was the only place you'd be safe. Even Bird couldn't get there without an invitation from Ishtab. New ruler, new rules.
She was quiet for a while, then added,
So I helped her. We told Bird we were going shopping for an enchanted wedding dress. He said she had to be the most gorgeous bride in history. It was pretty much the only thing he'd let her out of his sight for. I mean, he's pretty possessive. That's why the twins are so mad at me. But I didn't know she was going to...
Her voice cracked.
I didn't know she was giving herself to the underworld.
My mind was spinning, thinking what a strange world it was that Brooks lived in. And... As awful and scary and messed up as it was in that moment, her world was mine now, too. Brooks wiped her cheek, and I knew she was crying. Oh, boy. Me and tears didn't mix. I didn't know if I should hug her, or pat her shoulder, or hug her. She pushed off the rail and walked over to the bench at the stern.
Stupid wind. Makes my eyes water.
Yeah, me too, I said, following behind.
Ishtab tricked her, Brooks continued. In exchange for getting her out of the marriage, Ishtab told Quinn she could work off her debt by escorting souls to the underworld. It was only supposed to be for a few months, but then Ishtab changed her mind. Quinn's a powerful Nawal, can shift into almost any animal. That's valuable to Ishtab. So she forced Quinn to stay. If Quinn is down there, how do you know all this? I couldn't help it. The question just came out. Brooks's voice sounded small. Ishtab let me see her a few months ago. I opened my mouth to say something, but closed it again, thinking Brooks wasn't finished. She rolled her eyes. Go ahead. You went to Shibalba? No. We met at a gateway nearby, she said. Wait a second, I said. Quinn's alive in the underworld? She nodded. Ishtab needs her alive, for her powers. It gave me hope for Rosie. Maybe she was still alive, too. Then I remembered what Miss Cab had said. She'll be changed. Brooks continued. So I made a deal with Ishtab. I was getting pretty sick of that word, deal. It was only four stupid letters strung together, but they had thorns that knew how to draw blood. With a shaky sigh, Brooks said, Quinn overheard a bunch of demon lords talking one day. They knew about the prophecy, but Ishtab didn't. So I thought... The sky slanted, or maybe it was the boat sinking into a swell, but my stomach shot up to my throat. I moved our stuff and sat down on the bench. You thought you could use it to save your sister. I recalled what Ms. Cab had said about no one knowing who'd told Ishtab, about how I couldn't trust a Nawal. Brooks sat down next to me and pulled the blanket around her shoulders. I told Ishtab I'd bring Apooch back if she let my sister go and broke Quinn's tie to Bird. She just laughed and said I didn't have the strength, that I had never lived up to my family name, not like Quinn. I almost didn't want to ask, but I had to know. And if you didn't bring Apooch back? I'd lose access to Quinn forever. Brooks's eyes flitted in my direction and back to the sea. Her whole body trembled. And if he got free, then I would have to join Ishtab. I felt sick, empty, worthless. A strange heat ran through my veins. I would never have let Apooch out if I'd known Brooks had promised herself to the underworld. No. If I hadn't done it, Brooks might be dead. Or was that the same thing? That's why Ishtab's goons came for you, I said. It gets worse. I don't think I can take more right now, I said, trying to understand what Brooks had done. She'd lied to me, tricked me. But she'd done it to save her only family. I would have done it too. I was sure of it. Still, that didn't stop the burning sensation under my skin. You don't get it, Brooks muttered. The prophecy of fire, you had a choice. I didn't think I'd heard her right. What? What do you mean? I told you the magic would call to you. That part was true. I definitely didn't want to hear any more. Maybe I didn't need to know the truth. Because guess what? Sometimes the truth stinks. I stood up and looked around the boat, anywhere except at Brooks's accusing face. Where's Jazz? You think he needs any help? There was a way out. I stepped away from Brooks. A cold gust swept across the boat. Brooks fiddled with the blanket's loose threads. You could have walked away, she said, glancing up at me. You could have ignored the call. You didn't have to release him. Anger ripped through me so hard I started to shake. What? I'm lost here. You said I didn't have a choice. I didn't know you were part God. No one did. And that gave you the power to choose. My mind reeled. So if I'd known I was a godborn, I could have ignored the magic? A hot sensation started to climb up my bum leg. Would I have ignored the magic if I'd known? The salt air burned my eyes. You're wrong. I didn't have a choice. I just told you, you would have died. Brooks blinked back fresh tears. I was going to be dead either way. One choice leads to victory, the other to defeat. Well, thanks, Pacific. That piece of wisdom was just great and absolutely worthless. I thought about my so-called choices. They'd all led to one disastrous outcome. Death. Rosie, Brooks. And now, if I didn't beat Apooch, he'd destroy everyone else I cared about, and I'd become his servant, fighting on the wrong side of a bloody war. But even if I did defeat him, the gods would execute me for breaking some oath I'd never even agreed to. Are you gods catching on to how ridiculous this was? I sat back down. My head throbbed, filling with dark thoughts and confusion. Everything seemed impossible. I heard Hondo's voice in my head. Find the soft spot and go after it with all you've got. The only problem was, Apooch didn't seem to have any soft spots. I guess Hondo had never had to fight a god. I wouldn't blame you for hating me, Brooks said. I had enough hate in me for Apooch, for the twins, for... I don't hate you, I said. I gave a small shrug. I guess I don't even blame you. The air was tight and cold, and I really did want someone to blame, but everyone I mentally put up for the blame crown vanished, leaving me the only one left to wear it. So what are we going to do? Brooks asked. I am going to try to find a way to finish this without everyone dying. That's impossible, she whispered. Maybe it was, but doing nothing wasn't an option. Brooks pulled the blanket tighter. The gods might give you a trial instead of a death sentence, she said quietly, but it sounded more like a question than a fact. Really? No. Then why'd you say that? Because you look really awful, and I was trying to make you feel better. Well, don't. No more lies. No more lies. I was sitting so close to Brooks, our knees were touching. I need to get Apooch to come to the old world. I don't know why, but Huracan said to challenge him there. Brooks tugged my sleeve up to reveal the mark on my wrist. This is a tracking device, right? So? So, don't be dense. That means he'll follow you. You're brilliant. You're only seeing that now? By the way, I said, I like your freckles. What? They disappeared when you were enchanted, but now they're back. Her face flushed. You're annoying, she said through a giant yawn. Then she put her head on my shoulder. My whole body tensed. As her breathing slowed, so did mine. She fell asleep and I stayed still, not wanting to disturb her. She needed her rest. This girl who couldn't swim, but knew how to fly. The world was quiet, except for the purr of the engine. And for a minute, I thought nothing could touch us. Not out here in the middle of the sea, where everything else was so far away. A plan started to form in my head. Carefully, I slipped out from under Brooks and eased her down onto the bench, covering her with a blanket. Then I went to the railing, leaned over, and whispered, Pacific, are you there? No answer. I know you're down there, I said. I could really use your help right now. The black water swelled. FYI, I'm on the God's Most Wanted list, and good old Puke has the twins, and the whole world is pretty much disintegrating while you hide out. A sheet of fog wrapped around the boat, and I couldn't see more than a couple feet in front of me. And was it my imagination, or had the temperature dropped like 50 degrees? I was rubbing the chill off my arms, when something began to materialize in the waters below. I blinked and looked closer. It was a rowboat. Someone was inside. And it wasn't Pacific.
Chapter 30.
"You call that a boat?" a voice said. I peered through the dark as the fog lifted around the figure in the dinghy. The sea was now frozen solid, as smooth as a sheet of glass. The man stood and stepped onto the slick surface. He had on a pair of jeans and a plain gray t-shirt. I couldn't see his face very well, because it was hidden under the rim of a baseball cap that read Chargers, with a lightning bolt slicing the letters in half. His arms were covered in tattoos of snakes, slithering through piles of red and blue feathers. With the force of thunder, it hit me. This was the feathered serpent, as in Kukulkan, as in Brooks's holy K god of coolness, a.k.a. Kukumats. You're Kukumats, the guy who created the worlds with Huracan.
Call me Matt, and for the record, he created the worlds with me.
Matt, I repeated dumbly. Isn't that what you humans do? Shorten honorable names, change them according to your wishes.
His voice was deep, with a faint accent I'd never heard before, like a cross between Spanish and something that was sharper, harder. The surface of the water rose around our boat until it was flush with the deck, and Matt and I were standing on even ground, except he was a head taller. And his eyes? They were a shimmering violet. His chin was sharp, and his skin weathered.
"Some also call me Kukulkan," he said, "but I hate that name. Imagine the nicknames, Kuku or Kuk."
I thought about my own insulting nicknames. "You can call me Zane," I said quietly, trying not to wake Brooks. He looked at his wrist, like he had a watch on, but he didn't.
"So, Zane, I was sent here by an old friend."
A lump formed in my throat. How much did Matt know? Had Pacific or Huracan told him about me? Wasn't I supposed to be a secret?
"I know everything," he said, like he could read my mind.
"Okay." I figured I shouldn't say much. Find out what he knew first.
"I warned your father not to get mixed up with a human, but he didn't listen. He never listens. And now, look at the fine mess we find ourselves in."
I didn't want to talk about the stupid mess. I already knew all its tangles and knots.
"So he called you," I said.
"Why?"
"He has always had the worst timing. I was at a Bolts football game, and they were actually winning. Well, with my help, that is."
"You rig football games?"
He shrugged casually. "Sometimes I use the elements to others' advantage. That makes me generous, don't you think?"
I guess that was one way to look at it, unless you were on the losing end. Matt cupped his hands as if he were holding something fragile. A flickering light formed in his palms, and he blew on the tiny flame. It zipped into the black sky like a streak of lightning. A second later, thunder sounded. And not just once, there was a series of booms, like someone was knocking down gigantic pins with a bowling ball over and over.
"That should give us some privacy," he said. "Now, where were we?"
"How could I learn to do that?"
"You rig football games?" I said.
"Yes.
I mean, no. Stay focused, kid. I'm here to expedite your journey to the old world."
The air grew colder.
"How?"
He shook his head and sighed with annoyance, like I should have known the answer.
"I control the elements," he said. "The water does what I command, so I'll kick some currents into high gear. Put the wind at your back, and off you go. Then I can get back to my game."
Maybe things would work out after all.
"There's one little problem,"
he said. Why couldn't things ever be simple?
I can't be too obvious. Don't want to draw attention to you, if you know what I mean. So I'll have to take it a little easy. As in no hurricanes or tsunamis. Get it?
Right, I said. No storms. Just then, Pacific materialized from the ocean mist. She perched on the boat's railing, wearing the same jaguar-spotted cape as before.
Is he being nice to you, Zane?
I'm always nice, Matt said to her.
Mm-hmm.
Tell that to the two worlds you destroyed.
That's not the same thing, Matt said. They totally deserve that.
Pacific narrowed her eyes and walked over to me.
So is he being nice?
Uh-huh, I said.
What are you doing here?
Did you hear me call?
I'm going to tug on the time rope bit by bit, she said. Enough to buy you some time. But not so much that anyone figures out I'm not dead. But really, Zane, we can't make this a habit.
I had to admit, I felt a spark of hope in my chest. Then I remembered that in the end, I'd still have to have a face-off with the god of death, destruction, and darkness, and the hope fizzled.
How much time will it give us?
A few hours, at most, she said. Anything more, and the gods will notice. Thunder shook the sky, and Brooks stirred, mumbling something in her sleep. Matt tucked Pacific's pale hair behind her ear, looking at her all goo-goo-eyed.
They were an item? Maybe that's what happens when you live together for centuries.
The gods are looking for a fight, Matt said, turning his gaze back to me. We're choosing sides, getting ready for war.
But I thought you said you were at a football game.
You have a lot to learn, Zane Obispo. Gods can be in more than one place at a time. But what matters is that war is coming.
I started to pace.
What if I can defeat Apooch? Will there still be a war?
Trust has already been shattered, Pacific said. And no one wants to admit to breaking the sacred oath.
Why doesn't Huracan just tell them it was him? I said. Maybe he could ask for forgiveness.
Matt shook his head.
Gods don't forgive.
I was starting to wonder if I wanted to be related to a bunch of crazed, cold-hearted killers.
When will this war start?
You have to move quickly, Pacific said. Get to Apooch first, because if you don't...
We will.
Matt's jaw tensed. And I'd become a soldier of death, because I hadn't gotten the job done myself.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah, kid?
If, as a godborn, I could have chosen not to release Apooch, why didn't my dad tell me that? None of this had to happen.
Anger pulsed through my veins. Rosie wouldn't have had to die. Brooks wouldn't have lost her powers. I wouldn't have had to make the deal of death with Pukeface.
Pacific stepped closer. Yes. A godborn can ignore the magic, but only when he has come into his full power. And you haven't done that yet. So telling you wouldn't have made a difference.
Full power?
Matt folded his arms over his chest.
You don't become a god automatically, with the snap of a finger, or because of your bloodline. Godhood has to be earned, fought for. Your power arrives gradually, and when...
His sentence trailed off.
When what?
Pacific shot him a glare, then turned to me.
We can't say any more. Consider this your head start.
She smiled at me softly. I knew that dumb look. Teachers and school nurses and strangers at the grocery store had given it to me plenty. Poor kid.
We're doing this as a favor to your dad, Matt said. But remember, Apooch has powerful allies too.
Yeah, like the Yanto Triad, I said. Those guys are creepy.
You met them?
Matt pulled off his cap. Dark curls fell over his eyes. I told him and Pacific how the twins had been captured. I lifted my wrist and said, he's tracking me. Matt's eyes zeroed in on the skull tattoo with moving eyelids.
He's so uninventive. But not to worry, Zane. He's busy trying to figure out his enemy's next moves right now.